Rescue Breathing by R.C. McLaughlin. Narrated by Rhea 314 for Night Tracer in ITPE 2022. Rating teening up audiences, no archive warnings apply. Relationships. Kang Min-jong and Lee Dong-sik. Han Ju-won / Lee Dong-sik. It used to be a running joke that somewhere inside Lee Dong-sik was an endless supply of self-restraint, because no one was able to harness their own destructive tendencies the way he could. Park Dong-jae once said it must be like a wellspring, a renewable source that kept Dong-sik from punching every person that gawked and whispered and accused him of murdering his own sister. He suggested bottling and selling it, making it mandatory that every cop at every station and substation across the country drink it at the start of each week. Oh Ji-hwa vowed she would buy it by the keg. That famed restraint is the only thing that stops Dong-sik from throwing his phone when he hangs up on a lying fucking snake. He can feel it sloshing around his guts, pumped through kilometers of vasculature and soaking into his tissues. He's overflowing. He's drowning inside. Any second now, it's going to start coming through his pores and fill up the basement where Kang Jin-woo took a knife and... Nausea crackles and burns in his jaw. He sucks in air through his nose and holds it in his lungs until the cramping makes the urge to vomit fade. But the urge to scream refuses to budge until he forces it under the surface, down into still waters, down into the dark. Dragging in another breath, Dong-sik risks another glance at the table, but the fingers are still there, lined up in a row, 10 little fabulous soldiers stacked out in diamonds and blood. The flesh is jagged where the cuts were made, speckled red and dark brown like quail eggs under the skin. Subcutaneous bleeding. The arteries were full when they were severed. He presses his fist to his mouth to stem the tidal wave that wants to burst out. This was Min-jong's home. She was in every part of this place. Dong-sik hung the floating shelves in her room while she put up posters of pop idols he'd never heard of. He'd brought her back here after dragging her out of 100 clubs, made tea for her when she changed into sweatpants, let her curl into his side while they watched movies on her laptop. She knew every corner, every twist, every creak and every stair, and the heart that beat in these cold walls was sluggish and quiet, but it was entirely hers. A blade of sunshine cutting through the gloom. Her laughter lives in the stone. If he pressed his hand to it, she would whisper that while he would always be her hero, she was the mighty Kang Min-jong, and she was going to take on the world, whether it could handle it or not. This was her home, and she died here. Something hot tickles at the skin under his eyes. A leak sprung from his endless source, and he wipes it away with his sleeve. Are you coming? Kang Jin-woo had asked over the phone, a smile in his voice that clung to the words like oil, as though he were truly worried about Dong-sik missing dinner, as though he hadn't mutilated and murdered his own daughter and then left to go grill meat for his friends. Dong-sik draws himself up straight and lets the reality of the situation settle over his shoulders. They let Kang Jin-woo in. His parents brought him into the fold, took care of him like one of their own. Dong-sik fought anyone that dared to mock his stutter or his inability to hold eye contact. Yu-yun taught him how to play the piano and drew up the layout for what would become Man-yang Grocery. It wasn't just his own family. Man-yang curled around him like a coronary vessel, pumped its lifeblood into him. Pang Ju-sun always gave him an extra egg in his bibimbap. Yu Hyuk-ju took Min-jong shopping for clothes. They let him in, let their blood flow into him, and he severed the artery himself. Dong-sik thinks of Yu-yun running scales with Jin-woo. Jin-woo deserves good music for a change, Opa. Not the dumb shit you like to play in the car, she'd said with a smile like sharpened sunshine, nudging Jin-woo until he was smiling too, her fingers nimble on the keys, her fingers lined up in the garden. and breathes out. Pak Dongjae was right. There is a wellspring of self-restraint inside Lee Dongsik. But what he doesn't know is that it flows, furrows a path for the cold runoff into a vast lake, and far below the still surface, deep in the dark, a shadow lurks in the slime-covered bottom, positively mad with hunger. It has been starving since Yuyun vanished into thin air, and Dongsik has done everything he can to keep it quiet. The last time it fed was the night his idiot partner bled out in the alley, his hand tight around Dongsik's until it wasn't. And when Song Jio had rasped a laugh about killing Sanyeop in self-defense, Dongsik had heard the covetous rumble inside himself like far-off thunder and thought, clenching his hands in Song Jio's hair, "Eat your fill just this once." Dongsik exhales again, belly cramping with anticipation. The monster inside him is ravenous tonight. He takes out his phone and dials 112 so he can report two murders. Minjong's. And the one that will happen at Jae-yi's shop in about 20 minutes. There are at least 36 knives of various sizes there, and Dongsik isn't planning on using a single one of them. When Kang Jimu breathes his last breath, it will be because Dongsik ripped out his trachea with his bare hands. And then Dongsik will slap the cuffs on his own wrists and sleep like a baby in whatever hole they throw him in. "I am," Dongsik should have said before he hung up on Kang Jinmu. "Coming for you. Minjong is coming for you. Yuyun, who has waited 20 years for vengeance, is coming for you. Every woman whose photo lives on my wall is coming for you. Through me, they're all coming for you." His thumb moves to press the call button, then pauses. He looks up and his gaze snags on the array of fingers and the green scarf. Minjong's still here. Kang Jinmu would never have had the time to bring her body somewhere else before he was due at Jae-yi's. Ji-hoon showing up for the Makgeolli must have disrupted whatever plans he had. She's still here. And without a body, there can be no proof. And without proof, they can't secure an indictment. Without a body, Kang Jinmu will simply be the unfortunate victim of a cop gone bad, not a serial killer responsible for at least a dozen deaths, and the women he tortured and murdered will never get the justice they deserve. Dongsik can't leave without finding Minjong. And when he does, he'll wrap her carefully in his hoodie, the one she always kept stealing because she loved that it smelled like him, mountain air and sweat from his jogs and cigarette smoke, before she's forced to endure the chill of the morgue, then the blaze of the crematorium. She'll be cradled in the happy medium, warm and safe. And then he'll go to Jae-yi's and tear apart the snake in the garden with his own hands. He pushes his way out into the back of Manyang Grocery, skidding a little in the dirt, and starts with the perimeter, knocking over barrels and dislodging towers of crates. In the back of his mind, someone scolds him. "You're making a mess, Opa. You're being loud and it's pissing off the neighbors." He can't tell whose voice it is. There's nothing hiding behind the shit stacked against the walls, and maybe Dongsik's not giving Kang Jinmu enough credit. He's clever, far more cunning than anyone would suspect, if he's fooled them all this time. He wouldn't stash a body practically out in the open. He'd hide it somewhere no one would think to look, where the smell would be smothered by dirt and... He looks over his shoulder at the three clay pots hiding secrets in the ground. Dongsik drops to his knees in the Cheongdokdae and begins tearing the lids off the containers, shoving his hands into half-fermented kimchi. At first, the squelch of it feels like intestines, like muscle and sinew, and he has to swallow down the relieved burn of bile every time he pulls out nothing but cold vegetables. He dives deeper, tearing out what must be weeks and months worth of work, throwing handfuls of it into the dirt. The air turns heavy and sour. Panting, he struggles to his feet, kicks at a clump of cabbage, because she's not there, not in any of the pots. And the heel of his shoe slips in the sauce and jerks him backward, catching the edge of the patio stones. Dirt gets inside his sock, which nearly pushes him into a full psychotic break, until his brain catches up with him and he looks down. The dirt packed around the stones is darker than the rest of the yard. A cold shiver radiates from the bottom of his spine into every part of him as the sounds of the night fade away. For a second, Dongsik thinks he's having a heart attack. Exhaling, he bends down and reaches for the stone nearest him, pulling it away to reveal absolutely nothing. The edge cuts into his palm, rubs grit and dust in the gash, but he doesn't feel the sting, the widening of the schism, too busy moving on to the next stone, then the one above it. And as he begins to shift the one next to that one, he hears it, just barely over the roar of blood in his ears. The sound of soil shifting against something. Plastic. His knee throbs and buckles, which works in his favor and puts him closer to the ground, so he can shift the stones until his fingers go numb. Pushing through the cramping allows him to use the way they curl like claws as spades, shoveling dirt until they hit the slick, clear stretch of the bag. Inside, he sees denim and the glint of sequins. An animal noise rips itself from his throat. It feels like he's choking on blood as he tears the plastic, breaks the vacuum, pulling as hard as he can until Minzong slides free from the grave she'd been forced into. Dongxing rolls her onto her back, and she goes without complaint, her head lolling like it's going to slide right off her shoulders. There's a wide, dark band almost burned into her skin. From the scarf, probably. The swell of her cheek has softened oddly, deflated a little bit like a bicycle tire. She looks like she's sleeping. Like a corpse. Kang Jingmu had laughed. Dongxik puts his ear to her mouth, her nose, like he's putting his ear to a seashell to hear the ocean, but there's nothing. No air, no waves. His hands move before he can protest the futility of it, tilting her chin up. Then he ignores the voice that bubbles up from the deep and garbles, "She's gone. She's dead. You promised to sate this hunger." He interlocks his fingers, splaying them over her chest, left, middle. The Manyang team crams into the back room at the station every year for mandatory CPR recertification. And as soon as the door shuts and everyone's finished their coffees, the complaining starts. "Didn't we just do this? I can't believe we have to do this again. It's not like anything's changed from last year. I could be drinking, I could be watching a movie, I could be doing literally anything else. I'd rather be cleaning out my gutters than do this." A man named Kim Kyungmin has run the workshop for the last 6 years. He looks about 12 and smiles way too much for someone so knowledgeable about asphyxiation. Dongsik ran a background check on him the first year, just in case. As he begins the compressions, he thinks of Kim Kyungmin and his utterly deranged lessons. In the event that someone passes out because they're unable to breathe, what you need to focus on is providing what oxygen you can and restoring the heartbeat. Kim Kyungmin reminded them during his last visit, beaming wide as he licked at a cone of shaved ice. "Keep the heart beating. You'll keep the blood pressure somewhat stable until you can get them to a ventilator. Breathe for them when they can't. Be their heartbeat when there's none to be found." He's supposed to press down 2 inches and no further and count the compressions. A set of 30 at a rate of twice per second. Kim Kyungmin always sang off-key to the song Stayin' Alive as he demonstrated. As soon as Dongsik hits 30, he stops, tilts Minjong's chin up a little to clear her airway, and then seals his lips over hers. He almost expects her mouth to tilt into a grin against his, for her to crow about finally winning a kiss from him, how it's practice for their wedding. But she doesn't move, doesn't breathe. So he does it for her, forcing air into her lungs. Rescue breathing. Buddy breathing, according to Kim Kyungmin. Dongsik cranes his head to see if her chest rises. It doesn't, so he tilts her head back once more before attempting again. He can't tell if her chest moves this time, so he switches back to another set of compressions. Stayin' alive. Halfway through, something snaps beneath his palm. It's so loud he thinks someone's there with him, that they stepped on a branch. Maybe it's the adorable, annoying Inspector Han, come to accuse him of being responsible for this, too. But when Dongsik looks up, there's no one there. And now Minchong's got a broken rib. At the 30 mark, he stops and tilts her head, leans down and breathes into her. This time, her chest rises. His eyes prickle and burn, hot at the sight. Good girl, he chokes out. Do it one more time for me, Minchong-yi. She does him one better. As he completes the second breath, a tiny puff of air hits his upper lip in reply. Her chest rises and falls on its own, just a little. Dongsik drops his head and lets out a single sob that feels cold and clean in his chest, the sweet slide of a knife. That's my girl. Keep it up. Prove that smiling twerp wrong. He can't wait to call Kim Kyung-min and suggest a revision to the workshop, because 8 minutes of no oxygen mean nothing to the mighty Kang Minzong. He resumes compressions until he can feel the flutter of her heart beneath his hand without pressing down, then fumbles for his phone. He unlocks it, places it on the ground by his knee, and hisses for it to dial 112. When the call connects, he doesn't give the poor operator a chance to finish the greeting, just slips into the comfort of his training like a warm bath. This is Assistant Officer Lee Dongsik of the Manyang Police, requesting immediate emergency assistance at Manyang Grocery, located at 45 Yangwagi. Victim is female, 20 years old, and was... He stumbles a little, but manages to push through. Buried alive. She was unconscious and wasn't breathing when I found her. I've been performing CPR compressions and rescue breathing for the last several minutes. She's breathing shallowly on her own now, but she was without oxygen for a long time. The operator says something about an emergency response team being on their way, but Dongsik doesn't catch how far out they are over the wave of relief that washes over him. Manyang doesn't have a full ambulatory center, just a volunteer service. If they're coming from Moonsu, it'll be at least 15 minutes. If the volunteer service mobilizes and Park Eun-young is driving, they'll be here in 3. Officer E, I've called for police backup to your location. The nearest substation did not respond, but there are 3 cars en route from Moonju proper. The operator says, please confirm your badge number. I'm going to call the Manyang substation again. He wants to shout about wasting his breath on something so small, but he rattles off the numbers and then barks, the Manyang substation is currently having dinner with the man responsible for this. If you start calling them, they're going to spook him into running. The operator pauses. The whole substation? Except that's not true, is it? His entire team isn't currently drinking makgeolli and shoving kaiwi down their gullets while Kang Jinmu smiles and stutters his way through securing his alibi. But the ones that are with Kang Jinmu are without their guns, their cuffs. At 6 on the dot, they peel away everything that makes them cops like snake molts, checking everything at the door of the station so they can walk out into the evening as civilians. If he calls one of them, even someone as circumspect as Ojiwa, they'll argue with him, deny it out loud, and Jinmu will surely bolt. How far away is the ambulance? They're turning onto Yangwagi now, Officer Yi. Please confirm the building number. Good old Park Eun-young. She's pushing 70, but she has the lead foot of someone a quarter of her age. If they miss the fucking Manyang grocery sign, they should all be fired. He says, building is number 45. We're in the back outside. He hangs up and holds his breath, releasing it the moment he hears the sound of sirens getting louder. Hang in there, Minzong-yi. Dongsik murmurs, and places his hand on her chest to feel it rise against his palm. Her breathing is thready, reduced to a wheeze, most likely a result of a crushed windpipe, just like Pang Jusun. He slides his hand up to palpate her throat. His AP knowledge is old enough to have kids by now, but it rallies enough to tell him to press gently at the base of her chin to find the hyoid. He feels around gently, but he can't tell if he's pressing against it, and there's no reason for him to know what a broken hyoid feels like. A little niggle at the back of his mind whispers that Yuyeon must be somewhere here with a broken hyoid. She might be under the remaining patio stones. 20 years and a handful of centimeters away. He shifts onto his knees and cranes to look. If he moves quickly, he could. Min-sung pulls in a breath that whistles through her teeth, which then goes jagged before stopping entirely. Fuck. Dongsik nearly knees her in the side as he scrambles to start another round of compressions. It's an Ouroboros of torture. He keeps crushing her, pushing her back into the dirt he dug her out of, 30 attempts to bury her again every time. Dongsik grits his teeth until his jaw aches and barks at his phone to make another call.
I told you not to contact me outside of work hours.
Han Juan says, with a long-suffering sigh when he finally picks up on the sixth ring. It's so startlingly bitchy that Dongsik can't help but laugh, through a sudden onslaught of tears, even as he tries not to lose count or rhythm.
I need you to stop whatever you're doing and make an arrest. Are you ready to confess, then? Excellent. Tell me your location and I'll be—
Han Juan. Miracle of miracles, the chinky punk loses his tongue. Maybe because Dongsik's voice cracks clean in two. The silence that follows isn't a long one.
Why are you breathing like that?
Are you still in Manyang? Dongsik has no idea where Prince Charmings go when they're not swanning into sleepy little towns and throwing murder accusations around like confetti. There's no way Han Juan commutes to and from Seoul every day, even in a car as nice as his. The traffic alone would drive someone to kill. A laugh wrapped in barbed wire bubbles in his chest and catches against bone. And he holds it there until the cold pain stings sweetly, like the scent of coming snow. Be a lunatic on your own time, Lee Dongsik.
Why?
Suspicion coats the word, but there's something else there that drips and leaves a wax cast, something like guilt. There's no time to parse it now.
If you're in Manyang, go straight to Jay's shop and arrest Kang Jinmu for the attempted murder of Kan Min-chong.
28. 29.
His daughter? Are you actually insane? Officer Oh introduced me to Kang Jinmu this morning, and there's no way someone like that would ever...
Dongsik's halfway through the second rescue breath when he tears away from Min-chong to snarl full of teeth and hunger. Chop off his own daughter's fingers and bury her alive next to the fucking kimchi?
Believe me, this has been a learning experience for me too.
There's a shocked pause. Maybe Han Juan's entire world has been kicked off its axis, like Dongsik's. Gravity trying to pull one way, while it rotates in a different direction. Everything flips before settling into place. Deserts have replaced rainforests, ocean currents have reversed course, and an overlooked grocer is a serial killer. Dongsik is stunned silent too, because he fucking forgot about Min-chong's fingers. He looks down where her hands have been sluggishly leaking blood onto the dirt, pooled thick and dark by his knee, then shrugs off his hoodie. The bulk of it is too soft and big to apply pressure, so he uses the sleeves, carefully wrapping the bleeding stumps up tight, knotting the excess so it won't shift.
How will she text?
He thinks, then immediately wants to punch himself. On the list of things Min-chong will have to worry about if she pulls through this, texting is on page 12. Juan swallows. The dry click of his throat comes over the line like a gunshot.
Where are you? Is she alive?
I've been administering CPR since I got here, but I don't know how long she was... Tch, went the plastic, sucked between her lips instead of air. His eyes fill, hot as blood, but he grits his teeth and blinks them back. Later. He'll let it all out later.
Emergency services just showed up.
Lee Dongsik, where the fuck are you?
Park Eun-young's croak echoes through the side alley, uneven footsteps growing louder.
Back here,
he shouts, shoulders slumping in relief. It's one thing to see the flashing lights. It doesn't count for anything until a woman older and more terrifying than his mother ever was starts barking demands.
You better have an oxygen machine with you, or I'm arresting you for gross incompetence.
A care vent unit clutched in her hand, Eun-young walks into the yard and gives him an unimpressed glare before her gaze falls around Dongsik's knees. She gasps like she's been punched and folds down onto Minjong's other side. Her fingers are spotted with age, but they work as fast as they ever did, immediately unspooling a circuit and connecting it to the resuscitator.
Oh God, she was...
Her voice breaks. She was on the care team that delivered Minjong after she retired from Moonju Hospital and began volunteer service in Manyang. She would run programs through the primary school, teaching kids how to handle emergencies. For 6 years, Minjong would call Dongsik to crow about how she was quicker on her feet than her classmates during the simulations, and how Eun-young gave her the task of helping teach the others. She had dreams of becoming a doctor until she discovered how much studying was actually involved. Eun-young used to laugh and tell Minjong to focus on getting the hell out of Manyang. She could declare a major once she left them all in the dust.
I don't know how long she was in the ground, he says, watching, fixed, as Eun-young fits the mask over Minjong's nose and mouth.
She begins turning the knobs, motions almost robotic in their precision, and the machine whirs to life. Her hands hold the mask, keeping the seal tight, and Minjong's chest begins to rise and fall in timed intervals. There comes a clatter of sound from the alley, but it's Pei-hyo, the kid that lives two streets over from Dongsik, who tells everyone to call him Danny. He must be Eun-young's latest intern. He's rolling a gurney into the yard. His nostrils flare, and he makes a face at the sour tang of kimchi, but he says nothing, just lowers the gurney until it's nearly on the ground. He looks at Dongsik, solemn as anything.
I'll need you to help me lift her, Officer Yi.
Pei-hyo is a good kid. Never got into trouble, other than the odd noise complaint during the summer, which Dongsik always ignored. Kids are loud, especially outside. It's how they are. Dongsik slides his hand under Minjong's shoulders, flattening them until he thinks he's got a good hold. Anihyo gets her feet. One of the kid's hands slides up to grip her calf. If it were any other day, Dongsik would slap him upside the head for being so handsy. On the count of three, Eun-young says, adjusting her hold on the resuscitator to keep the face mask seal secure. As soon as she counts to three, they move as one, lifting Minjong in a single go, and the moment her back hits the gurney, Ihyo is on her, strapping her in. Eun-young places the care vent on the gurney next to her, careful to keep the face mask steady.
Moonju's response will be here soon. You're going to stay and take them through what happened, right?
Eun-young asks, a bit out of breath, as they begin rolling toward the alley. He opens his mouth to answer, but all that comes out is the sound like a balloon losing air. His body is one giant cramp, both coiled impossibly tight and boneless, like he just ran a marathon, just fought a war. His heart is racing so fast, he almost calls out to them to check his vitals. The yard around goes syrupy, swimming a little. He did it. He did enough to keep her alive, keep her breathing, and now Eun-young will get her to Moonju, where she'll be taken care of, where she'll be safe, far, far away from what comes next. Sucking in a breath through his nose, Dongsik closes his eyes and sinks into the deep, searching for an old friend, trying to lure it back to the surface. Minjong is safe, and now it's time to hunt. At the promise of blood, there comes a rumble from the slime.
Dongsik.
He breaks the surface suddenly, startled, his eyes open.
We've got squads coming in from Moonju and Sao, and someone's going to need to explain what the hell happened here tonight. You're not done yet.
Eun-young barks. Then she and Ihyo disappear with Minjong onto the street. He stares after them, oddly thwarted, then rolls his shoulders. There's a slight ripple at the water's edge, but it smooths out until the lake in him goes still as a pane of glass. Dongsik picks his phone up off the ground and taps out of the speakerphone, tipping it a hair from his mouth, as intimate as a kiss. He lets the beast surface just enough to rumble its displeasure at being denied once again.
Are you still there?
The reply comes almost before he finishes speaking. Duon sounds tinny, like he's talking through the speakers in his car. There's an odd rush in the background, driving, then.
I'm here.
Dongxik can picture him, as if he were standing inches away from him in the yard that was nearly made a cemetery tonight. His dark eyes wide and sucking in every hint of light from the world. A handsome cocktail of a man, confusion and determination and dogged drive, shaken and poured over ice. If he were here, Dongxik might reach out and thumb that full, infuriating bottom lip, push gently through those perfect teeth, might bring his thumb to his own mouth and lick the spit from his skin to sample the taste of Han Juan's shock. Then what are you waiting for?
What?
You came to this town looking for a murderer, Inspector Han. He murmurs, drinking down the hitch of breath on the other end of the line. Worth every one on the menu. I already told you where to find one. The end. If you've enjoyed this story, please leave feedback to the author. You can do that at a link to the text through this Podfix post. Thank you for listening. And happy ITVE Night Tracer. Hope you enjoyed it.